Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
If you hear this sound, that means this episode is also featured on our YouTube channel as a video. Head over to www.youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast to check it out.
Warning, this episode contains foul language and mentions of murder, sexual assault, suicide, SIDS, and clowns. But it's not that bad, I promise.
Listening to or watching Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, spooky, musical, eerie, mysterious, a little evil, and everything in between. Each week we sit down together from across the country and we talk about something weird. And this week, of course, is no exception as we dive into the wonderfully weird once again for your ear holes and eye holes. We are chatting possible psychic ability of a criminal profiler, strange human body facts, a terrifying motel that I will absolutely never stay in, ever, even if you paid me millions of dollars, and another song that seems to be cursed in the most disturbing of ways. All of the most bizarre things wrapped up to one episode, you lucky ducks. So get cozy, or as cozy as you can with this 100-degree heat outside. I'm sure you're melting just like us. And get ready for a gossip sesh with your favorite ghost hosts. My name is Lauren, and this is my lovely co-host, Ashley.
Hi, weirdos. Guess who's not hot? The girl with a fan. Actually,
she's got a fan.
That's a PSA for all of you out there, because I've been to two weddings this summer, and I was the only one with a fan. And every single person that saw me was like, that's such a good idea. This was like $3.
Genius.
Buy yourself a fan. It's so nice. You know what it's nice for? This is for the ladies and some of the gays and theys and some of the straight men. Straight men wear makeup. Yeah. It helps with your makeup. Because like sweaty bodies are sweaty bodies. But when you're wearing a face of makeup and you sweat, it's tragic.
Keep it cool so it's not coming down your face.
So if you get a nice fan, you can sort of dry that sweat and not get as...
It's a good tip. And nice. I need to buy one because it's so funny. We haven't had many weddings this year, which is insane. Ashley has been the one going to weddings.
I can't believe I've been to weddings.
I've kind of had a year off.
Because everyone you know is married.
I know. Now they've all done it.
They've all done it.
But we actually have one coming up this coming Monday. And yes, you heard correctly.
A Monday wedding?
Who's having a Monday wedding, which is inconvenient for everybody. I can't even get into it too much, but it's in Temecula and it's supposed to be like 95 degrees.
No.
And the ceremony is for sure outside with no,
no.
shade. And then cocktail hour and reception is in an air-conditioned building, thank God. But the fan is such a good tip because I know they're keeping the ceremony short, but even in a 15-minute ceremony, I'm going to be melting. So the fan is a good call.
Grab one.
And I'm just going to have to wear like... a short dress so I don't die. Oh my gosh.
I also, another tip. Oh, I don't have it with me. Oh, I think I do. It's all the way over there. I'm not going over there. I bought on Amazon. This is not an ad for Bezos. That's just where I happened to get this. I bought this like, it's like in sort of like a deodorant thing. I have deodorant here, but not this. And it's like
for the thighs?
Anti-chafing. It's for the thighs. It's like in a hot pink, Hallelujah. It's in like a hot pink little deodorant stick, and you just rub it in between your thighs so that you don't create, you know, a fire in your pants.
I love that too. So much to get for this Monday wedding.
Listen, you need to go shopping. Go shopping immediately.
Truly. Yeah. It's going to be rough.
I wanted to give one quick little shout out and like a little pat on my own back. Okay. There's a film out right now. It's on Netflix. I would really appreciate it if you all went and saw it, just because it's like kind of maybe one of my new top 10 favorite movies of all time. It's called They Cloned Tyrone. It is a sci-fi movie starring Jamie Foxx and what's his name? John Boyega. Hottie, hottie, hot, hot John Boyega.
Star Wars nerd.
Yeah, Star Wars. I know him from Attack the Block. But yes, he was in Star Wars, apparently. Anyways, it is on Netflix right now. And the reason I'm patting myself on the back is because I had put it in a newsletter last year. And I was like, here's the synopsis of this movie that's probably coming out next year. It sounds amazing. And I just like to, you know, I was right.
You were correct. I was correct. Everyone has been loving it. Yeah. I have not had a chance to sit down with it because I just had family in town for 1,000 years, but I cannot wait to watch it.
You should. Alex will like it too.
I was going to say, I think it's one we can watch together.
It's like Blade Runner meets It Follows meets Get Out.
Here for all of that.
Yeah.
Love that. Love that for us.
But that's not what we're here for today, although I would like to just kick my feet up and watch Netflix. Okay? It's been a long day. Same. That's why I've got my tequila.
Tequila. And I got a white wine spritzer like your neighbor, Julie, who's 50 next door. Also, I don't know if you saw me looking down at it. I scooped a fruit fly out and I've continued to drink it because you can't stop the party.
I have always scooped flies out of my wine.
Okay.
It doesn't bother me.
Get each other. Yeah. Like, obviously that's a thing. But I have been at parties recently, which like fruit flies are abundant. It's the summertime. And I feel like everyone I've been with recently is like, ah, dang it, a fruit fly.
I have to throw my whole drink out. And I'm like, okay, just scoop it out with your finger.
Nope. I just scooped them out and threw them in the trash.
You know what? That is true. Like, you and I are a different breed. One, we're from the Midwest. So I think that's part of it. Two, we're a little dumb. And we do have to share with the listeners something that happened. If you follow my my personal Instagram, you probably are privy to this situation. But last week, I was talking to Joe about root beer because we really like A&W sugar-free root beer, but you can't find it everywhere. So I had gone to the store and I was like, they didn't have A&W sugar-free root beer. All they had were Mug root beer and Bargs. And he was like, Barks. And I was like, Bargs. And he was like, Barks. It's 1000% Barks. It's not Bargs. And I looked it up on my phone because I was so positive it was Bargs root beer. And it was Barks. And then I was mad because I'm 35. I know I have said Barks out loud multiple times. And not one person has corrected me to say that it's Barks.
The amount of people I've said Barks in front of with a clear G.
Well, and that's the thing. Then we found out when I posted it on my Instagram, Lauren also thought it was Barks. Which, thank you, because I was like, am I just the dumbest person that's ever lived? No.
Just the two of us. Well, what's really sad is I thought it would be something that connected, like, a big group of us, but instead I got attacked. Everybody was like, you're dumb, and no one has ever thought it was Bargs in the history of time.
Not true. One of our podcast brothers, Matt, Moth Boy, Matt, from the Moth Boy podcast, also thought it was Bargs. So
shout out to Moth Boys. Thank God. Mike Johnston, past guest of like our Detroit and also like New York and just our wonderful friend and past guest, actually like assaulted me over text message and was like, you're a liar. There's no way you thought it was Bargs. That is dumb as shit. And like, he's saying that as a loving friend, as weird as it sounds. I think he was just like,
how have you gone this long? Yeah. So
never was a cue to me.
Every single person was like, don't you remember their ads? Barks has bite. And I was like, first of all, obviously I don't. Second of all, bad ad. Because Mug root beer is the one with the dog.
Yeah.
So wouldn't mug have bite?
Right.
We should get into it. True. Lauren is going first today. This is a show about weird stuff.
Oh, I love us. Okay, we are going to start with the segment that you all know and love by now. Where in the world is Keep It Weird going? Carmen Sandiego in her, like, really cool hat.
Very cool red hat.
Where's she going?
Where's she going?
Well, we're not going far this time. Which, sorry, womp womp. Usually in these segments, I feel like we have traveled all over the world, but we're just headed to Nevada.
Oh, that's not far. That's way closer to you than me, but it's not far.
Yes, it would be a trek for Ashley, especially if she was driving. But for me, like, hop, skip, and a jump. We're real close. We are headed to a place that I would never actually go, but for all of you freaks out there, maybe you'd like it. The Clown Motel.
No!
Is a clown-themed motel along North Main Street.
No, we're not doing this segment. We're going to move on. I refuse. What do you mean, Clown Hotel? I actually have seen pictures of the Clown Motel because people send it to me all the time. Like, I think you would like this. And I'm like, why?
Who?
Why do you think I would like
who
this?
Who and where? Tonopah, Nevada. Okay. It has been referred to as America's scariest motel. Mm. And it is a building located adjacent to the historic Tonopah Cemetery.
Of course it is.
Where
when
so
I
many
think
people
clowns,
are buried.
I think dead bodies buried in a field.
Yes, 1,000%. It is a nightmare. It is a 31-room clown motel that was opened in 1985 by Lenroy and David in honor of their late father, Clarence David, whose collection of over 150 clown statues was used to decorate the property. And it has since been sold to a couple of other freaks. I'm going to call them all freaks. In 1995, Bob Perschetti bought the motel and operated it for 22 years until 2017. Then he put it up for sale for $900,000, which, like, the fact that a whole motel sold for that much money, I mean, maybe things are different in Nevada, but to me now, Nevada, to me nowadays, that sounds cheap. I'm like, for an entire motel? But it's a clown motel.
So yeah, I was going to say, caveat, though, you also have to buy the clowns. But I have one thing to say about this. How dare you?
Yes. Me?
The man who collected the clowns, the people who made the clown motel, you for telling me
Clarence.
The story, the people who stay at the hotel. Like, how dare all of you? How dare you bring this to the world? This is why we're not reaching apotheosis.
This is why the aliens are like, they'll never reach
they'll never
it because
make
of this
it.
Clown motel in Nevada.
Okay, so it's just because I've seen the outside of it and I haven't looked further.
Yes.
Because every time someone sends me a link, I'm like, guess what's not getting
so
clicked
much.
On. Are they in every room?
Yes, they are in every single room. So I was like, let me get into it. And
Guys.
The reason I was like talking about the people who have like been selling it and passing it on is because like the first two people who the siblings who opened it in honor of their father had the 150 clown statues, and then Bob, who bought it after them, just kind of kept that alive and kept the history. But then this person who bought it in 2017, they appointed an art director and gave the whole place a facelift and tried to make it look more like, ooh, cool retro motel, which is super trendy nowadays,
right.
And add more clowns.
No.
So it now has 2,000 pieces of clown memorabilia. And it is a nightmare to us. Like, we are very upset by it, clearly. But there are horror enthusiasts who seek out
For
this
sure.
motel. And people who love spooky historical buildings, who are, you know, drawn to the eerie decor, but also they're fascinated by the ghost stories that come along with this place because it's next to a cemetery. Okay. So the world famous clown motel calls itself America's scariest motel, but it's true for several reasons. It's located to the cemetery, which houses mine workers who died in the tragic Belmont mine fire in 1911.
God.
So it's a bunch of angry and sad mine workers. Horrible tragedy. So there could be ghosts from there, but also it houses Clarence, the father of the original owners. So he's right there.
He's
probably
in
coming
there.
In to play with his clowns. So you're going to see him. And also, the hotel is just so creepy because of the decor. It's some happy clowns, but it's a lot of terrifying clowns that have come in over the years, and clowns that may have belonged to tragic households that could be carrying some sort of energy with them. It kind of covers every horrifying base. Yeah, you know these clowns weren't
bought firsthand.
No.
We don't know the history of these clowns. They've had a history.
They're going to be, like, dirty, beaten up. They're coming from somewhere. And it extends through the entire motel. Mm. It's in the lobby. It's in all of the rooms. And each room has 2 to 3 custom art pieces inside that feature clowns. There's also going to be things hanging on the wall, yeah, looking terrifying down at you. Maybe even on the ceiling, looking down at you while you sleep. And a few of the rooms are famous because of tragedies that happened inside them, and the owners will tell you all about that history. They love to share it. It's like you walk in and they're like, let me tell you everything.
Most hotels try to hide the tragedies that happened within the walls. And they're like, actually, no, a ton of tragedies have happened here, and you can find them in this book I wrote.
Here you are.
Here you are.
And fear was not the initial intent with the siblings that opened the hotel. Sure. They were just like, an ode to our dad who loved clowns, yay. But now it is so fed into, and like the reason the owners talk about it is they're like, come to our haunted motel, because that's what is selling. Ghost adventurers have been there, of course. Zach Bagans has a fear of clowns, and so he did a whole thing about it. Blech. I mean, it's fine.
He was like, there's a demon in every one of these clowns.
Demon clowns, which has never been said once by any of these clowns, but I'm sure he said it. Also, some movies have been shot at this spot. One called The Clown Motel, Spirits Arise.
Ooh.
And then there was a Huluween special on Hulu called Return of the Killer Binge, which I have a lot of questions about that. But go ahead and check them out, everybody, because I don't know what that means. So here is what has really happened, just to put some of the most haunted rooms in there, just like we did when we have stayed in haunted places. We're like, there are some creepier rooms than others. There is a little bit of history. Room 108 is the most notorious room at the Clown Motel. An elderly man who worked at the motel's front counter decided to spend the night in one of the rooms. He wasn't feeling well during his entire stay, but when he called the front desk, his coworker did not answer. So the man decided to call his sister for help, and she immediately dialed 911 because she could tell something was really wrong with him, but it was too late. He died on the way to the hospital because he was so violently ill out of nowhere that he couldn't even make it to the hospital.
Jeez.
And when the front desk worker was asked about the situation, they claimed they were at the front desk the entire time. They never once left, and the phone never rang. Sure enough, surveillance footage showed that the phone never rang, and the front desk worker was standing there the entire time throughout that time frame where the person was not feeling well. It was as if something had been stopping the victim from calling for help.
It's real room 1408 of you.
Mm-hmm. The room has since been decorated after the film It, as if to represent the mischievous apparition that would mess with phone lines, maybe at night. So now you can go in and see Pennywise and maybe not be able to make a phone call.
Cool.
Love it. Room 111 has the history of a terminally ill man once staying in the room. The illness!
Go home!
Knowing he... Go to your house! Don't stay at the Clown Motel! He knew he might only have a few days left to live, and he wanted to pass away without being a burden to his family. Stop. So that is why he stayed here. Every night, he went to sleep expecting not to wake up the next day. However, he kept waking up again, and he claimed that every morning he saw a shadowy figure in his room, and he begged the ghost to take his life because he was in so much pain. When nothing happened, he later shot himself in the parking lot after growing so frustrated and so out of options that he thought this was the only way out.
He literally went there because he was like, if there's one place I could be killed by a ghost, it's here.
It'd be here. They will certainly take my life here. And then he ended up having to do it himself, which it's just so horrible altogether. So this haunted room is currently themed in the horror film theme, The Exorcist. So
Ashley, what?
And
what does that have to do with clowns? It doesn't make any sense.
I think they just want it. Listen,
it's like the horror thing
didn't really have to do with the movie It. They're just like, oh, we're making it horrifying. So now they have Exorcist, like,
puppets and clowns. And many guests who have stayed in this room have talked about seeing ghostly figures, and they think they may see a dying man laying in the bed when they set up a camera, whatever. You just have to see for yourself if you're brave enough.
If you dare.
If you dare. In room 210, a man stopped to stay the night after experiencing extreme back pain again. Why? Are you going there when you're ill? There has to be another option. He had faced this pain his entire life, but he never got a proper diagnosis. He just had to deal with it, and he was like, oh, I'm having another episode, I'm pulling over. And when he woke up that next morning, he felt more comfortable than he had in a long time. He believed the spirits of the room had cured his back pain, so he lived at the motel from that moment on. And he never experienced his back pain as severely after that, and he passed away in that room, that very room, 6 years later, room 210.
So are they friendly? Are they friend or foe?
Well, it doesn't sound like anything has made people feel darkness, as some of the other ones have. It is themed after Halloween films.
Sure.
So again, still filled with clowns, but with a little Michael Myers thrown in.
I think it's weird that they're like, these clowns love this horror franchise.
That's what I'm saying. But again, they're now like diving into this. Listen. Like, it has become something totally different. It's haunted, and now they're making it like Halloween. The holiday and the movie. However, despite the spooky decor, many guests favor this room because the spirits are positive. It gives off an energy of positivity. You still might, like, see something, but it's happy. And then this is the last one, room 214. Melvin Dumar, an associate of billionaire Howard Hughes, stayed in this room for about 3 years. People believe that a ghost in the room grew fond of Dumar and was devastated when he left. Visitors claim that the ghost often returns to look for his friend, and if he doesn't find him, he will play little tricks on the guests, such as flickering the lights, causing a mess, and stealing items. And this room, for absolutely no reason, now has a theme of Friday the 13th.
Because camping. Because
I just spit. I gleeked. Oh. That got me good, because you're right. It has nothing to do with it, but I can't stress enough how much this current owner is just like, we are now a horror hotel.
We're a horror hotel. Come here for horror.
With more clowns and still some visitors probably in the night. So I still never want to stay here, no matter how Halloween and horror movie you make it. Mm-hmm. And that's just me. But if you want to, it's on 521 North Main Street, Tonopah, Nevada, 89049. I'm just giving you the whole
thing. How close is Tonopah, Nevada to, like, Vegas? Like, how close are other things in Nevada?
Like, smack dab in the middle between Reno and Vegas.
Okay.
So you could be, like, doing a road trip and easily go there. It's in one of the old mining towns, so pretty much all you have to do there is go to an old mining museum or this hotel or, like, some of the old saloons, which I've never been to this specific town, but Alex and I did stop in a mining town last time we were in Lake Tahoe in California, because you also can do a road trip through Nevada on your way back. And that ended up being so fun. Like, the old mining towns are kind of like spooky, and they try to look like the town has never aged.
Yeah, they try and preserve them.
Totally. You get a little of the mining history. So, like, go there, get some history, stay at the Clown Motel if you dare. It's super cheap. You can stay there for like $70 to $80 a night, unless you request one of those specific rooms that I mentioned, and then it could go up to like $130, $150.
Which is still not bad.
It just depends. Not bad in the slice. Mm-hmm. Just depends on what you're looking for. Go check it out. I never will. And
yeah, if you go, take a picture for us, because you won't catch us dead there.
No. And even from a standpoint of, like, we like to do investigations, I can't. I physically cannot.
I'm not even afraid
of clowns.
If
that many clowns,
like,
are looking
at me. I don't have
me.
A problem with clowns. But Lucky when you're
you.
Like, look at all these clowns, I'm like, something sick about this. Something sick about this.
It is.
Love of clowns. I even, like, growing up, my grandma, you know, she had, like, dolls. She had that, what's that sock monkey doll that, like, all grandmas had? It's like a little sock monkey. No? Okay. She had, like, one of the famous sock monkey dolls. And she had, like,
a
little porcelain
dolls. I think
of Lamb
Chop, the puppet, who really freaks me out.
Lamb Chop scares you?
Yes.
This is the song that... What about the Muppets? Different?
No, for some reason I can get on board with Muppets. Maybe it's because I'm just immune because my husband is obsessed with them and has figurines everywhere.
Maybe you don't,
but
like,
honestly,
oh, well, no. The Muppets creepy, are hand so. Puppets, huh? Listen, yeah. But yeah, what but I was saying, like more, Grandma also had like two or three clowns in this room too. And yep. I remember being like, I just don't want... I'm not scared of them. I just don't understand the appeal of them.
No.
So when you're like, I love clowns, here are all my clowns, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
And in that same vein, like, I, it's not even like clowns, clowns. Like, yes, if a clown was walking around, I'd be a little like, ugh. But like, if he's just honking a horn and spraying water out of a flower, whatever. But clown figurines are a little unsettling to me. Because like you said, like, why do you need that decor in your house? I don't like it. It doesn't make me feel happy. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
So... And I wouldn't be able to sleep in a room of those figurines looking at me and those art pieces.
I also wouldn't be able
to sleep.
Walking
into a lobby.
I wouldn't be able to sleep in a room full of dolls, period. Whether they were
yes,
clowns,
dolls are the
children.
Same, as we've discussed. Yep. Little children, no. And it's next to the cemetery where, like, hundreds of people from this mining town died. No, it's just a no.
Just a no for us. Sorry. Well.
And that's it. Yay.
I had a thought.
She did it. Yay, she did it.
Yay.
I love when you have a thought.
She did it. She had a thought.
She did it. She had a thought, everybody. Congrats.
I'm so proud of her. You know what I did today? This was so dumb. Like, right before I left for work, I had, like, some of my bangs are, like, too long. Like, what's happening here? So I, like, did a little trim, and then I went to work, and I got to work, and I just had, like, bang trimmings, like, just framing my... It was cute.
Just, like, the little sprinkles of hair?
Yeah, whoops.
Oh,
forgot about
that. Adorable. I am so...
I had a thought.
Anyway.
I'm going to preface this thought with a trigger warning and a caveat. Trigger warning. I'm going to mention some famous cases involving murderers, most of which being the serial variety, but I'm not going to get into any, like, super nasty details. I also want to be clear, and I will reiterate at the end, but before anyone gets fired up, I am not trying to discredit any hard work done by this human man. I'm just saying, what if?
What if she had a thought?
I had a
passing thought.
I just want to share my thought.
Get off
with
her
you.
Back.
What if? Okay, so I was watching that documentary I told you about last week on Max. I hate them for making me say Max.
I know.
Here we are.
I just want to say HBO, but we can't.
Max is not a thing. The show is called A Body in the Basement. It's a kind of a wild idea for a series. It's literally just stories about murder cases in which the body was found in a basement. But whatever, the first three episodes were pretty good, so I recommend it. Really graphic, though. Like, super graphic. Goes into details of the murders. So far, three episodes, no dudes getting murdered. Not a fan of that.
Interesting.
You know some dudes been found in a basement. But anyways. The first episode of the series took place in Wood River, Illinois in 1978, which is about an hour away from my hometown. The murder was of a literally stunning 23-year-old woman named Carla Brown. And like I said, I'm not going to go into details of that unless it pertains to what FBI agent John Douglas had to say about it, because he's actually the subject of my thought today. So, little backstory for anyone who doesn't know, John Douglas is the man who created criminal profiling when it comes to serial murderers. The Netflix show that we will never get a third season of, no matter how hard I cry, Mindhunter, was based off of his early FBI career. This man interviewed serial killers all across the United States, including Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, the BTK killer, Ed Kemper, Charles Manson. If they were serial killing, he was talking to them.
He was having a chat.
The point of which was to understand them, what their motives were, what made them tick, what triggered them to kill, how they chose their victims, etc. And by doing all these interviews with these men, he was able to then look at certain crime scenes and murder investigations and give the detectives an idea of who they should be looking for. Because we now know in 2023 that serial murderers are completely different animals than mass murderers or one-off murderers. Like, it's a completely different situation, or like a organized crime, totally different animal.
Right. And for anybody who has watched all 85 seasons of Criminal Minds, that is what their job
That's
is.
What their job
Looking
is.
For the FBI as murderer profilers.
Exactly.
So it's like this all comes from that.
This man, John Douglas, was so, so good at this. I don't think there's been anyone like him since.
In a freaky way. Yeah.
And I was thinking, what if part of the reason he was so good at this was because he had some form of clairvoyance.
Mm, a little bit of psychic ability.
Yeah, not something that he even knew was happening to him. Not something that he, like, recognized. Right. And again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying he didn't work hard. It's just a magical power. Yeah, but listen to some of the profiles he came up with and tell me it's not some kind of psychic ability. Like, I don't believe you. In Carla Brown's case, all he had to go off of were crime scene photos. He looked at the photo of the scene years after it had taken place. And listen, I've seen the photos. Obviously, the body was blurred, thank Christ. But I do not understand, for the life of me, how he did this.
How he drew his conclusion.
So he saw these pictures of this crime scene, and he said that the murderer was unorganized and unsophisticated. He believed it was the killer's first time killing and didn't believe it was his original intent when going into the home. He believed Carla had maybe rejected a sexual advance. He believed the killer was a white male in his late 20s or early 30s with a high school education, some vocational training, probably electrician training, and an unkempt appearance. He said the cops likely have spoken to the killer already and he would likely pass a lie detector test. He said the killer knew Carla's routine somewhat and likely lived or worked nearby. He said the killer likely drove a Volkswagen that was older, beat up, and red or orange. He said if they created a media frenzy indicating they were closing in on the killer, he would be spooked and nervous and he would probably leave the area, but he also said that if it stays quiet, the killer will reach out to you guys and say something like, quote, hey, I want to help out as a witness, but I don't want to be considered a suspect.
Ooh. Very specific.
Extremely specific.
Fronts.
So they took this profile, they compared it to their top three suspects, one of which, a neighbor named Paul, fit the bill to a T, white male. High school education, unkempt appearance, knew Carla's routine, had taken electrician classes, passed his first lie detector they gave him years prior, drove a beat-up Volkswagen that was rust-colored, and wouldn't you know it, called their office as the police were re-questioning his friend and offered to help by saying, quote, I want to help in any way I can as a witness, but I don't want to be considered a suspect.
Okay. I wish I could do the whistle. That is insane.
How on earth would you know?
How?
What kind
from
of car
just a few
this
photos. And again, I don't doubt that this man, you know, he was very intelligent and he could read
absolutely
clues and figure things out. We are not discrediting him, but that is wild how specific he got. I feel like it could have been in his subconscious. Like
exactly.
You said, he didn't even know he had the ability, but he was getting like pictures from somewhere because that is too insane.
It's so insane.
It's too
insane. And listen, I know how he did some of it. I know he guessed he had electrician training because he tied her up with electrical wire. Okay.
Right.
I know that he assumed he was a white male because oftentimes killers kill within their own demographics. Like, okay. But the Volkswagen and the color of the car? Like, how, goddammit?
The
how?
Orange? The burnt orange?
How?
How? And that he would call in and say that. Because, again, if you know serial killers enough from your studies, like maybe, but that still feels so specific.
But this isn't a serial killer. I mean, according to him, he thought
okay,
this was his
well,
first
even
time killing and it wasn't even his intent. So, like,
Okay, then that's even crazier.
John Douglas made his mark in the world during the Atlanta child murders. From 1979 to 1981, young black men and black children were being murdered at an alarming rate in Atlanta, and no one knew why. The police force was adamant they were looking for a white man, possibly a member of a white supremacy group like the KKK, which honestly, yeah, that's what I would assume too. But as soon as Douglas was on the case, he came in and was like, nope, this is what's happening. He's black. And his reasoning, totally brilliant and not psychic at all, was that these boys were disappearing from a predominantly black neighborhood. If a white man was picking them up, someone would notice.
Have seen it, yep.
If a black man was picking them up, maybe it would go unnoticed. So John went public with this theory. Against the wishes of the cops, because he just knew. He just knew that they were looking for a black man. He went public with the theory that the killer was probably a young African-American male with a fixation on police culture who owned a dog, probably a German shepherd. That's what he said about this guy. The media reported soon after that fiber evidence had been found on several victims. And as soon as they did that, Douglas was like, we have to start staking out bridges because he's going to start dumping bodies in sources of water to get rid of the evidence. So we need to put people on every bridge in Atlanta. And what do you know? Wow. May 22nd, 1981, investigators who were staking out a bridge heard a big splash and pulled over a car that crossed the bridge, which happened to be a surplus police car. So like an out of commission police car that had been bought. Driven by 23-year-old photographer Wayne Williams, and found fibers from his home and hair from his dog, which was indeed a German Shepherd. Oh. And it matched the victims.
Well, okay.
That's what's crazy about this guy. Douglas can look at a crime scene and tell you how many people perpetrated the crime. He can tell you if it was planned or unplanned, the type of career the person would be interested in, the car they would drive, the clothes they would wear.
Their dog.
Off of one case. A lot of profilers can do this after the killer or violent offender has committed multiple crimes, because you can look, you can build a profile of who the victims are, how they are killed.
Look at their pattern.
Exactly. Yep. But Douglas can look at a single crime and basically tell you who did it.
Exactly. Right.
So it just got me thinking.
That's insane.
Of people throughout history that were exceptionally fantastic at this thing that almost seems impossible to do. How do we know they didn't have some kind of psychic ability that not even they would be aware of?
Aware of. Yeah. It was just popping into their brain.
John Douglas was like notoriously a pain in the fucking ass, because these people were like, how is this possible? He's like, I just know it. Like, back off. I just know it.
I just had to trust him.
I think that having some sort of psychic connection would also have helped him tremendously when getting into the mind of these men, getting the answers out of them that he sought, because when hundreds of other interviewees would have the wool pulled over their eyes and be fooled by these dudes, John Douglas would go in and talk to them and get the real deal within a matter of sessions, sometimes the first time meeting the man.
Jeez. And that would be frustrating. I'm like, well, how are you doing it? I tried.
Well, and it's cool that he went on and like taught this for his entire career and, you know.
Of course. And changed the game forever. And it's why we have the profilers that we have. So it's very cool, but damn.
But I'm not the only weirdo who thought this about him. Douglas was actually asked once if he was a psychic, probably more than once, but like once that there is a record of. One time he went to a police unit, and this is actually in the first season of Mindhunter. I don't think conversation is, but like this case was. He went to a police unit to help them with the case of an elderly woman who had been savagely beaten and sexually assaulted. He studied the crime scene photo of this one assault and said, okay, here's what I think. It's a 16 or 17-year-old high school kid. He'll be disheveled looking. He'll have scruffy hair, generally poorly groomed. He'll be a loner, kind of weird, no girlfriend, and a lot of bottled up anger. He comes to her house. He knows she's going to be alone. He has probably done some odd jobs for her in the past. And at that point, he paused and said, there's someone who meets this description out there, and if you can find him, that's your guy. And one of the detectives on the force asked, are you psychic? And he said, no, my job would be a lot easier if I were. And the detective said, because we had a psychic named Beverly Newton in here a couple weeks ago, and she gave us almost the exact same description. And again,
he's psychic.
It's an elderly woman who got beaten and sexually assaulted and murdered. Like, how do you make the connection that it's a teenager? Like, what about it presents that to your brain?
What about that says teenager to you? I mean, obviously, I'm nowhere near this world in general, right. So I would be like, it's definitely like a 58-year-old man. I have no idea. But that, a teenager, how did you get there? I want to follow all the steps. I don't know. He may have had the gift.
Well, he doesn't object to it. He once wrote, what I try to do with a case is to take in all the evidence I have to work with and then put myself mentally and emotionally in the head of the offender. I try to think as he does. Exactly how this happens, I'm really not sure. If there is a psychic component to this, I won't run from it. So he never said, like absolutely that. Not, I'm not a psychic. He was like, listen, if it is comes psychic, to me. Like... good. Like, I'll take it.
Great.
Like,
it's helping me.
It's helping me. It's helping the world. And I don't think that, you know, this silly little thought or theory of mine pertains only to criminal profiling. If you've ever watched Paul McCartney write the song Get Back for the Beatles, like, that shit is insane. He was just, like, it's channeling crazy. The music and the words.
And it just came.
And it just came out.
And that's what I'm saying. I think it happens and you just don't know what it is as the person. Paul McCartney might not have known, but there was.
Well, I've even reached out to friends of mine that I know that are mediums or psychics and been like, I don't know how to tell if like I'm having psychic thoughts or connecting to spirit or like whatever, or if it's just my inner mind. Like, how do you tell the difference? And they've all been like, just I mean, you voice. Kind of can't. You just have to kind of like trust that what is coming into your head is real and true.
Yeah, right.
And I just think some people are closer to or have the ability to access certain capacities that we all have, but some people just are able to access it more freely. And if you can find out how to use that ability in your life or in your career, the sky's the limit. I think you are bound to excel.
Good for you.
Yeah, if you can figure out how to tap into that, I think that it just sort of... happens for you.
Totally. That is a very cool thought.
Yeah.
And I'm with you on it.
Also, just to shout out one more thing, John Douglas, he has a couple books that I highly recommend. I've read two of them, but I haven't read the other one. Where are they? I wrote them down. Mindhunter, obviously. One's called Mindhunter. Mm-hmm. Show's named after it. Another one's called The Killer Across the Table. And then the other one is called The Anatomy of Motive. So in his books, he details a lot of specific cases and a lot of specific profiling he did. So check it out if you want to hear more. He's a fascinating dude.
We love that. We love that. John Douglas.
John.
And a fan. All right. We are going into a segment we've only done once before, but it was presented to us by a friend. She came up with this segment idea.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And it was one of those $50 segment ideas, which you are also welcome to do. Beware of ballads that can invade your brain. Make no mistake of the melodies that cause pain. Tune out the tunes that cause you to quiver. Hymns that haunt are sure to send a shiver. Cursed crooners and spooky songs. Crooked covers and scary sing-alongs. Cold courses and sordid sonnets. Crazy canters and sinful soloists. Cursed crooners and spooky songs. This segment is sponsored by our good friend Mel, our under-the-sea expert and beautiful human being. Under the sea. And she wants to remind everyone, every time we do this segment, we are giving her the shout out that she deserves. She wants to remind everyone about Shout Your Abortion or shoutyourabortion.com, providing resources and safety for those living in states with Handmaid's Tale level laws. You have a safe space and you can find answers with this website, with these people, shoutyourabortion.com.
Okay.
Get the help that you need. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you, Mel.
Cursed crooners and spooky songs. And in today's cruised kerners
and spooky smays.
Why is that so funny? I want that to be the title instead. Cruised kerners and spooky shrek. Oh, we are going to a song that was so funny called Gloomy Sunday. This is like a serious topic, kind of.
Get it together.
But I can't get over it.
Gloomy Sunday.
Gloomy Sunday. Not Bloody Sunday. Gloomy Sunday.
Sounds fun.
Really fun. In Vienna, a teenage girl drowned herself while clutching a piece of sheet music. And in Budapest, not long after that, a shopkeeper was found dead, seemingly by his own self, left a note that quoted lyrics of the same song. In London, a woman sadly overdosed while listening to a record of a specific song over and over and over.
Is this real?
Yes. The piece of music that connects all these deaths is the notorious Gloomy Sunday, which was also nicknamed the Hungarian Suicide Song, and it has been linked to over 100 deaths, usually from taking one's own life, including the one of the man who composed it.
What the fuck?
Very scary. I know. I will not get graphic with any of these, but I guess I should throw in a little late for a trigger warning, but maybe Ashley will throw something in sooner, but I promise not to get graphic and super detailed, but there is going to be talk of suicide just because of what has actually happened in this story. Yes.
My God.
But we will not get crazy. I know. So the connection could just be coincidence and you could call it urban legend, but those details are certain of the sheet music and the notes being involved. But one thing is for sure, Gloomy Sunday's composer, Rezo Sarez, I'm sure I'm not saying that totally correct, but he did take his life, and the success of his greatest hit may have been a contributing factor. It all just kind of goes together. So
it was a hit. It's not some like secret thing that's only on like 4 records in the world and it's hard to find. Wow.
It was very widely known. I will get into that.
Okay.
So in 1933, the Hungarian-born Sarez, as I was talking about, was a 34-year-old struggling songwriter. Some accounts have him living in Paris, but others Budapest. But either way, he was probably traveling back and forth between the two. And the story goes that after his girlfriend left him, he was so depressed that he wrote the melody that became Gloomy Sunday. It is a minor key, spooky sounding song, like words and lyrics aside. Anytime something is in a minor key, it just gives you that eerie feeling.
Right.
So he found this spooky tune, and then he was given melancholy lyrics for it in Hungarian by his friend and poet Laszlo Zsivor. And some reports claim it might have been Zsivor's girlfriend who left him, and he wrote the lyrics, and it was just a poem first that was put to music. Okay. Again, things get kind of
It was 1933.
Together.
What do you want us to do?
It was 1933. What do you want? We're giving you the best we can.
God.
But the two of them wrote this together. Somebody's girlfriend left them. There was depression involved. And then this came about. And Sarez did add a few of his own lyrics. He was more talking about war and apocalypse. And Zsivor wanted it to become a heartbreak ballad. And together they came up with Gloomy Sunday. The song did not make much of a splash at first. Mm-hmm. But 2 years later, a recorded version by someone named Pál Kalmár was connected to a rash of suicides in Hungary. And that's where the story started to gain traction. The song became banned shortly after it gained popularity because it was believed the song was causing these suicides. Nobody could make any direct connection because all it was a couple of cases of they had played it earlier that day. The song was in their head. They were writing down lyrics. They were clutching the sheet music. But everyone could just say, like, that was Chance. It's a popular song.
Yeah.
But either way, the song was banned because it was so depressing and dark that Hungary was like, no, we're just not going to do it. And people loved that it was a juicy story and that it might be a cursed song. And so once this, you know, became more of news throughout Hungary and spreading to other places, music publishers from America and England soon came a-calling because they were like, what is this dark song
we need to get our hands on? What is this crazy tune?
We want it over here. Why?
Why?
They're saying it causes death, but sure. So then there is this man named Sam M. Lewis from Tin Pan Alley, and he also had a partner who was a British theater lyricist named Desmond Carter, and they came together and wrote an English translation of the song. Lewis's version was recorded in 1936 by a singer named Hal Kemp and his orchestra, and that really caught on because then it was being played in America and in England and gaining popularity for its English translation, and we know how to take things and run with them and be crazy, so it really got going. And Sam did change up the lyrics a little bit when he was translating it, and he even added a third verse of hope to make it more commercial. So the whole song is just like death and despair. And obviously you can all go look up the original lyrics, but...
And then it's like, but don't worry, everything's fine. Don't worry. Please don't kill yourself. Not this
don't
time.
Do it. And that was it. I'm just kidding. But okay. That was it. No, the first line to the third verse starts, dreaming, I was only dreaming. I wake and I find you asleep in the deep of my heart, dear. So that opens up the third verse saying, like, everything we thought was death and despair and losing our loved ones was actually just a dream.
Okay.
Hopeful. So he changed it, and then it was put out into popularity. Yay, just a dream. And then in 1941, even though it was pretty popular already with the English translation, Billie Holiday recorded the English translated version. And then it really became popular. But having Billie Holiday associated with this song that had the rumor of causing... suicide in Hungary. Well, when Billie Holiday is associated with it, and she kind of had this tragic, like, party lifestyle, like, her life ended way too soon in tragedy, that helped the rumors along of, like, of course. Billie Holiday is singing it, blah, 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 blah. So everybody gets talking. Doesn't help the rumors at all. And despite conflicting reports, the song was never officially banned in the U.S., but it was banned in England in the early 40s. The BBC deemed the song too upsetting for the public, and then later said that only instrumental versions could be played on the radio because the lyrics were too upsetting, even though the instrumentals were still dark and minor gloomy. And interesting, but very gloomy. So we'll never know what for sure was causing these people to take their own lives, but there were several occasions, and again, you were asking, like, is this real? Like, the little evidence we have, whether you say it's coincidental or not, is that... on several occasions, someone had the song either playing on a record player, like they found the person as it's still going around, or they were clutching the sheet music or a note with the lyrics on it, or friends and family would report that just before the person died, they were complaining of not being able to get the song out of their head.
Aye, aye, aye.
And that was just facts, and it was true, and you can make your own conclusions from that. So it's quite strange, regardless of what you believe. And then just... to wrap it all up, what happened to Suresh, the writer of the song? During World War II, he was put in a labor camp by the Nazis, which he survived.
Oh.
Went through this crazy thing, but survived. And then after that, he worked in the theater and the circus. He was a trapeze artist, man of many talents.
Wow.
I think that's a fun tidbit. He really just wanted to be a performer in some way. And then, after his success as a trapeze artist, he did return to songwriting, but he never was able to get a hit as big as Gloomy Sunday. And in fact, the story goes that when the song first became a success, he attempted to reconcile with his ex who inspired it, but he found out that she had poisoned herself, and there was a copy of the sheet music nearby. In other versions of the story, she may have just left a note with the words Gloomy Sunday on it, but either way, people are saying something about the song was nearby and she had taken her own life. And whether that's true or not, Suresh himself did commit suicide in 1968 by jumping from the window of a Budapest apartment building. A after not being able to find success after
Can we
the
all
song.
Vow so not dark to look up this endings. Song?
No, that's the thing is, even people, I heard, like, I looked it up, and a few, like, modern-day artists have covered it, including Sarah McLachlan, which I was like, you Sarah. Have done enough with your depressing songs. Yeah. The dog commercial already makes me... So she is just, like, Sarah. Ready for violence.
Yeah, she's ready but, for something.
And I don't know, like, obviously we are not hearing ramblings of this anymore, even though modern artists have covered it. So I don't know if it was just something going on there. And maybe, I mean, he took his own life in 1968, and I don't know if that was then, like, the end of it, and we haven't yeah. heard of anything. It does seem like everything kind of happened between the 30s and, like, 1968. So maybe that was the end of the curse. Who knows? Obviously,
maybe it was
it
also like the
in,
original
but...
recording that was cursed too, and not necessarily totally. Any of the subsequent recordings. Did you ever read Lullaby Absolutely. By Chuck Palahniuk?
No.
Okay, Chuck Palahniuk is an author. He wrote most famously, he wrote Fight Club. But he also yes. wrote
I was
a
like,
book
why do
Lullaby.
I know that name?
And. So Lullaby goes a little off the rails. I'm not actually a huge fan of it. However, the concept of the book is so fucking creepy. The concept of the book is that someone got a hold of this, like, old indigenous African death song. Basically a song that they sing to, like, the dying and the people in pain that literally just kills the person. And mm-hmm. put it in a book of lullabies for children because just ignorance-wise didn't know what it was. They just knew it was like a song from this culture. So they put it in a book of lullabies. Yeah. And basically that book of lullabies is how they explained SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome is that all these people had this book of lullabies and literally read this, like, death song to their children.
To their child.
And so the book is about this, like, reporter who's going around trying to, like, track down all these cases of SIDS where the family had this book of lullabies. So, like, that sounds awesome. Book goes a little off the rails and it's a little too
sure.
wackadoo for me, but that's exact. Yes. That's immediately what
Yikes,
I thought
spikes.
Of.
Also, I just want to wrap this up with Suresh's words when, you know, he was learning that what was happening to people, his conflicted emotions towards it. His quote was, I stand in the midst of this deadly success as an accused man. This fatal fame hurts me. I cried all of the disappointments of my heart into this song, and it seems that others with feelings like mine have found their own hurt in it. Which, I feel like his look at it is, like, so profound, and, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a curse. Somebody just related to it a little too much, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but he's like,
felt
we're
the
hurt
way
people.
I did when I wrote it.
Yeah.
And yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like listening to the Smiths. You're like, absolutely. Absolutely. Good. I feel this dark.
Yeah.
I feel this darkness.
1,000%.
All around me.
Yes.
Wow. 1,000%. Well, that's fucked up. Thank you for bringing that
I
to
know.
Our
Such
attention.
A light, light, happy story.
We're going to have to raise our vibrations before we get into the finale.
I know, my goodness.
But in the meantime, that is all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you so, so much for listening. Next week, I don't know if it's going to be just me and Lauren. We do have a very, very, very special guest coming up, but I don't know when he's coming on, and I can't tell
do
you.
Do I know?
Is. Yeah. I sent you a screenshot, and I was like, guess who's coming on the show? Yeah. It's a big one,
just
guys.
Like,
you're going to be super, super fucking pumped. I can't announce it yet. But we have a big guest coming up. We're really, 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 really excited about
I'm jazzed.
It. So stay tuned.
I'm super jazzed.
In the meantime, though, please follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter, sort of. We're not on Threads. Maybe we will someday. We are on Facebook. We have a Facebook page that you can follow. But more importantly, we have a Facebook group. They are two different things. The Facebook page is just like us posting shit. The Facebook group, you can post stuff in too. We share a bunch of funny memes. We share creepy TikToks with each other. We have a bunch of chat threads going on. We have like a horror movie chat, a mental health chat. It's a good time. Please join us. We really enjoy talking to you guys on Facebook. Check out our Patreon at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. That's how we make all our money to produce this show. You can donate $1, $5, $10, or $50 for a sponsored segment to our show. And in return, you'll get ad-free episodes. You'll get bonus episodes, 2 a month. 2 more episodes than everyone else a month. It's pretty cool. And awesome. Newsletter at the end of every month and discounts on merch. There's a bunch of shit. You should do it. It's great. We love our patrons.
Cool kids are doing it.
More than everyone else. Yep. Oops. Also, please, if you are watching us on YouTube, and even if you're not watching us on YouTube, but you have the internet, which I know you do because you're listening to this right now, go to youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast. Hit subscribe. Subscribe to our channel. You make us look good. You get us closer to monetization. You love us. You're our friends. Why wouldn't you want to do this to support us? And
of course, do the right thing.
Do the right thing, guys. Do the right thing. There's a bee in the back, and every bee attack, and I turn it to a beehive blitz. There's a bee in the corner, and everybody.
Oh. I jumped it.
Listen, I didn't have a second verse. I was really winging it. Beehive blitz. Beehive blitz. It's hive mind.
Oh my gosh, Alex just did the most violent sneeze from the dining room. I hope that it was caught on the microphone because everyone should know how horrifying that man sneezes. It just made me jump out of my skin while I was dancing to the Beehive Blitz. And there's a sneeze in the back and everyone attacks and it turned into a Beehive Blitz.
This week it is my turn. I think our song raised our vibrations, but let's give it a second and just...
Oh, I do feel happy.
Happy thoughts. Happy thoughts, we're thinking happy thoughts, we're singing happy songs. We forgot all about the suicide one. That was a really
I'm flapping my arm flaps out. And it makes me glad.
There you go. week, Lauren is sending me a psychic message. We're absolutely going to get it, no doubt about it.
We are. Nobody is questioning.
Zener cards, we know all the shapes, there is no triangle involved.
No.
Is the shape you're sending me?
Okay. Ready.
Okay. And send it. I swear on my life I saw a triangle. Please send it harder.
Oh, no.
I keep getting a triangle. So is it a star?
No. Circle.
I get circle a lot.
I was saying... circle message so hard.
I saw triangles.
And then I was like, a circle's round.
I saw a triangle that was so clear to me that I literally was like, damn.
I know. I was like, I have to know what she was laughing about. I know, which is the story of our life. Oh, that makes me so sad. Okay, I want to look up more tips because you looked them up the last time. So I want to see if I can find tips and tricks that can help us like you did before because we're going to get it. We're getting back.
Listen, we got it and then we lost it and then we got it back and then we lost it again. Then we got it a little bit and now it's gone. So
that's what was confusing. It's been a lot of up and down because even last episode, like if I had trusted my gut, we were there. But this week, like, we didn't have it.
I did not have a circle. No, I had a triangle.
I know. And I had squiggly lines last week, but I decided to look at my ring light's shadow in my lids and trust it.
Yeah, maybe
instead.
We need to really kind of like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't close our eyes. Why are we closing our eyes? We should look right at
each
other.
There is no need.
There's no need to close our eyes.
It's true. If I look into your eyeballs, that's true.
Yeah. That's true. Anyways, have a good week, guys. We love you. Keep it weird.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.